You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN 91.9 FM. I'm Skylar Butenchen. The Trump administration no longer wants to appeal the decision of a federal judge in Oregon that blocked the president from deploying National Guard troops to Portland. As Oregon Public Broadcasting's Conrad Wilson reports, it could mark the end of last year's intense legal fight.
The U.S. Department of Justice told a federal appeals court last week that they're no longer challenging a decision by a federal judge in Oregon from November, one that blocked President Donald Trump from sending the National Guard to Portland. Attorneys for Oregon, California, and the city of Portland won the case. This week, they too indicated they were ready to be done, without more arguments before the Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. The federal government's reversal marks the end of a chapter, one that began on September 27th when the president announced he was sending troops to Oregon's largest city. Legal fights over Trump's domestic military deployment also played out in Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and Chicago as the president pushed the bounds of executive power in court. I'm Conrad Wilson in Portland.
This is KMUN. I'm Katie Frankowitz. Manzanita is clearing the way to make it easier to create middle housing. Think duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes, cottage clusters, townhouses. Last week, the city council held its first reading of a new ordinance that would amend and reorganize the existing land division ordinance and include a new article for expedited land divisions to accommodate middle housing. Under the revised ordinance, traditional land divisions like partitions and subdivisions would remain, but would be distinguished from a new category called middle housing land divisions. For a property owner, the changes are meant to provide a much more straightforward path to divide property into separate lots for this kind of development. A second reading of the ordinance is scheduled for March. This story comes to us through a news partnership with Manzanita Today.
A couple who own a former longtime paintbrush handle factory in Bay City, Oregon, are working to develop the property into a mixed-use development with affordable housing and space for businesses. Lisa and Ralph McCray have been gathering community feedback on the project in the past year and are developing a master plan envisioning 58 housing units on the site. The McCrays will appear before the Tillamook County Housing Commission this week to seek further funding to support the initial groundwork for the project. The couple has been working toward developing housing on the property since 2020. That was when the factory ceased manufacturing operations after more than 60 years producing paintbrush handles. The McCrays say that all the units would be affordable to people making between 80 and 120% of the area's median income. And they say that they will explore ownership models for some of the housing. On the business side of the development, the McCrays say they are looking for a tenant company involved in modular housing. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com.
This is local and regional news on KMUN. A proposal from Washington Democrats to tax income over $1 million got a first hearing February 6th. There's a sharp divide between those who see it as a way to generate funds to support lower-income residents and those who worry it will drive away businesses. Olympia correspondent Sarah Mises-Tan reports.
Supporters say the billions of dollars this tax could generate would help fund childcare, schools, and hospitals. Ryan Watt with the Economic Opportunity Institute says the state's 90-year-old tax structure is upside down.
We ask the rich to pay the least. We ask the poor to pay the most. It is simply not fair.
Opponents like Michelle Willems of the Associated General Contractors say a tax like this would hurt small businesses like contractors and builders.
For pass-through entities such as construction, that revenue is actually working capital, not personal wealth.
Governor Bob Ferguson has said he wants to see more of a break for lower-income households. He's in ongoing discussions with Democratic leadership on the bill. In Olympia, I'm Sarah Mises-Tan.
Citizenship oath ceremonies have been canceled for some in north-central Washington. NWPB's Renee Diaz has more.
Norma Gallegos works with Hand in Hand Immigration Services in Wenatchee. Recently, 7 oath ceremonies were canceled. She isn't sure why this is happening. The people waiting for their ceremony have completed all the steps to citizenship.
They're all excited because they've been waiting for months. They pass their test, then we get a cancellation. So their ceremony, scheduled tomorrow, has been canceled. These people go in panic.
The oath ceremony is the final stage of becoming a U.S. citizen after applicants complete background checks, interviews, and a civics exam. An immigrant must be a lawful permanent resident for at least 5 years before they can apply for naturalization. I'm Renee Diaz reporting.
Education advocates are calling on Washington state lawmakers to make it easier for military families to access preschool. In 2025, the Evergreen State was home to over 56,000 active duty troops. And for those who are parents, it can be hard to access affordable childcare and early education. But proposed legislation could help more military families qualify for the state's free preschool program. KNKX reporter Mitch Borden has more.
If you've ever stood in a preschool classroom like this one in Bremerton, it can seem a little chaotic. But these 3 and 4 year olds are learning a lot as they play games. Okay. On the day I visit, it's alphabet bingo.
Okay.
I have one.
No, okay. What about you?
Now, a bipartisan group of state lawmakers is aiming to help more children from military families get into classrooms like this one.
How about a Z?
I have a no.
Washington State's Early Childhood Education and Assistance Program, or ECAP as it's more commonly known, helps low-income students attend preschool for free. Along with helping with academics, the program provides meals and medical screenings. Education advocates like Joel Ryan are pushing for the program to include children that have parents who are in the armed forces because they face a lot of challenges.
I was surprised about the depth of poverty and the limited resources that are available to a lot of military families.
He's the executive director of the Washington State Association of Head Start and ECAP. Ryan points to evidence that many military families face food insecurity. Young kids can also struggle when a parent is deployed. He says ECAP can help with these problems, but a lot of military households make too much to qualify.
They're making just a little bit more than the cutoff that ECAP allows. And so we're creating a little bit of flexibility so that those families will be able to enroll.
The legislation being considered by Washington state lawmakers would expand ECAP's eligibility requirements. Depending on space in a classroom, it would allow higher-earning military families into the program, but there would be an income cap based on the state's median income. For a military household of 3 to qualify for ECAP, they would have to make less than $6,000 a month. If passed, this bill isn't expected to affect the state budget or increase ECAP's operating costs. Shannon Turner says opening up the program to more military families would be a big improvement. He lives in Bremerton and served in the Army for around a decade. He's a father of 4 and says whenever he was deployed, it was incredibly stressful.
You're always concerned about, well, how is my wife doing? How's my son? Is my family being taken care of? Do they have everything they need?
Turner says he knows from firsthand experience that it can be hard for lower-ranked service members to make ends meet. Turner started as a private in the Army and worked his way up to being a sergeant.
There's times we had to go to food banks or a church to help get funds to kind of help pay the rent. It's definitely hard.
High prices in Washington can be an issue for people moving here from areas with a low cost of living, according to Maria Tobin. She's with the South Sound Military and Communities Partnership, which advocates for military families and communities near Joint Base Lewis-McChord in Pierce County.
They get a stark reality when they come here, recognizing how expensive the gas is, how far away they're going to have to live, how much groceries cost here.
She says expanding access to ECAP could free up time for military spouses to get a job.
It's not only the educational component, but it does allow military families to have that second income.
It wasn't until after leaving the Army that Shannon Turner learned about ECAP. He was unemployed at the time, so his family qualified. Turner enrolled his daughter, and it didn't take long before he saw how the program was helping her come out of her shell.
When I would go and pick her up, the smile on her face and getting the hug, it's like, oh, Daddy, this is what I learned today. Oh, Daddy, here's a friend. Can we go over to her house so I can play with her?
Along with preparing his daughter for kindergarten, Turner says the program's medical screenings found that she was having hearing issues and helped her get the care she needed. He says ECAP was life-changing for his family. And now, he wants state lawmakers to make it easier for other military parents to get this support for their kids. I'm Mitch Borden, reporting.
The Pacific Northwest is having one of those bummer ski seasons. There just hasn't been a lot of snow. NWPB's Lauren Gallup tells us how ski areas are adjusting.
If snowboarder Becca Gale had to describe the ski season in one word, it would be
catastrophic.
That's because there just hasn't been much snow on ski hills around the Northwest. She was at Mount Hood a couple of weekends ago, and
you'd be just going down a run, just like normal, and there'd be just like a dirt path in front of you that you'd have to suddenly avoid.
Washington's snowpack is at a historically low level this season.
It's the third lowest on record for this time of year.
That's Karen Bimbacco. She's the deputy state climatologist. And while she says this season is certainly below average for snowpack, this might become more normal.
The strongest driver of snowfall and snowpack in the Pacific Northwest is increased global temperatures. So we do expect more declines into the future.
That means skiers have to make more snow. Kathleen McGuire works for White Pass Ski Area. She says they've been able to stay open this season thanks to expanded snowmaking equipment. So how do humans make snow?
We spray water through the snowmaking machine and it literally pushes it out into the air. Those water droplets freeze as soon as they hit the air, fall down onto the ground, and then we use our snow cats to literally just push that snow and cover the runs with it.
McGuire says the ski area has been sold out on Saturdays for a lot of the year. And to keep people skiing, McGuire says crews spend the week using whatever tools they need to maintain the snow for the next weekend.
So it is a lot more work than normal, but it's worth it because we've definitely seen our visitorship be extremely strong on the weekends.
The Summit at Snoqualmie also installed some new snowmaking equipment before the start of their season.
I've actually really been enjoying skiing here at West because of that snowmaking system.
Carter Rich is the vice president of marketing and sales at Snoqualmie. Even with the help of man-made snow, skiing at Snoqualmie and other areas around the Northwest is being described as spring-like conditions. Rich says the ski area has had to significantly reduce staffing and staff hours because of reduced operations. Because of conditions, skiers are only able to go to two of the areas Snoqualmie normally has open.
Things get a little bit congested on Saturdays and Sundays, and that's probably one of the toughest things in a season like this is trying to provide as much as possible and create as good of an experience as we possibly can given the situation.
Jansen Slaughter, a Washington skier, says he's been less motivated to travel to ski areas this season.
I'm not gonna go way out of my way for iffy snow, but I'll still find stuff where it's closer.
Instead, Slaughter has been getting out on hills near him.
We got a quarter inch of fresh powder at Bluewood the other day, which for this season was nice.
Slaughter says there's still skiing to be found if you know where to look for it.
You just have to roll with it, and you can still find ways to have fun.
I'm Lauren Gallup reporting.
Ballots are due tomorrow for voters weighing in on a proposed levy renewal from Pacific County Fire District No. 1. The fire district spans much of the Long Beach Peninsula. It's seeking voter approval in this special election to renew its property tax levy for emergency medical services for another 6-year period. The levy was last renewed in 2020, with over 78% of voters in that election supporting the measure. The proposed EMS levy rate is set at a maximum of 50 cents per $1,000 of assessed property value. Pacific County voters have strongly supported the fire district at the ballot box in recent years. In 2024, the fire district's proposal to lift its levy lid overwhelmingly passed, which allowed the district to hire 4 additional firefighters and acquire needed resources to support a third 24/7 staffed fire station in Surfside. Completed ballots can be returned to official drop boxes anytime until 8 p.m. tomorrow, February 10th. They can also be returned via mail, as long as they are postmarked by Election Day. On the peninsula, 24-hour drop boxes are located at the Pacific County Annex Building on Sandridge Road and at the Ocean Park Senior Center. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com.
Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN news team. That includes host and producer Skylar Butenshin and me, news director Katie Frankowitz. To send us a news tip or story idea, email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org. Or call the station during regular business hours at 503-325-0010. You can find more local news at kmun.org/news. Thanks for listening. The American Democracy Minute is up next.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Fulton County, Georgia has filed a complaint against the Trump Department of Justice for having seized as many as 700 boxes of securely stored ballots and election records during an FBI raid on January 28th. They want their ballots back. The warrant used in the highly irregular action is officially under seal, but WXIA reports that it authorized seizure of all physical ballots, all voting machine verification tapes, all ballot images, and all voter rolls from the 2020 general election in Fulton County. County Commission Chair Rob Pitt said in a press conference February 4th that a suit had been filed in federal district court seeking the return of the 3 truckloads of ballots and election records taken from the Fulton County Elections Hub. County officials also want to see the affidavit DOJ filed to obtain the warrant. Pitt said, "We don't know where they are. We don't know really who has them. We don't know what they're doing with them. Are they being tampered with? I can use my imagination, and I would certainly hope not, but we just don't know." Pitts added that the county was given no copies of what the FBI took and wants the original ballots returned for a full inventory. Quote, "This case is not just about Fulton County, it's about elections across Georgia and across the nation," Pitts said. We have links to local reporting at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal. Find us on Facebook at Democracy Minute.
You're listening to KMUN.